Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, and this is the local voter education program, and we're doing the final show right now until August, until the election time. And well, let's see here to get started. We have a couple of candidates on from District 12. That's Kate Granger's seat, I'll tell you what, I'm going to call my other call, so just hold one second here. I'm not good at multitasking, okay, and I don't have a staff.
Hello?
Yes, Sebastian, have you got the number to call in on? We started the show now. Have you got my website and you can find the number there? FWDistrict5.com. Okay, on the front page, there should be a slideshow. And even it, yeah, as a matter of fact, it has Maddie Parker, 97%, the local voters. At the very bottom, there should be a call-in number for the guests of 1515, I think. Or let me, I'll tell you, you see it? Okay, call in there and just hit the one button. If you have any problem, call me back on this phone, okay? Thank you. All right.
Okay, I think I'm back here. That was Sebastian just called in. So we'll get off to start here in just a second here. I'll get the shindig going here in just a second here. Let's see. Okay. Okay. Let's open that up. Okay, as I was saying, Kate Granger held the seat for quite a while as a congresswoman here. And as a matter of fact, she used to be a neighbor of mine when she was mayor. I was quite young back then, but she lived right close to my area here. So... But anyway, with her stepping down, that means we're going to have a new person coming in. And I guess to get started with, like the local voter education program, the point of this is to try to help people make more of an educated decision when you vote. We're always told to go vote, but you'll never see when you get much information about the candidates you're voting for. And that's what we're trying to do here. And what helps a lot on I can give you my method. The first thing is, if a candidate will not come out and talk to you, take questions, will not answer questions, that right there is number one to me. And if they don't do that, that's off. I don't have to look any further right there. But when they do take questions, then I got a step two I go to. And this is the first time the issue came up since I've been doing this in District 33. Usually I look for a candidate that has run for the same position again. I like one that was in Arlington that ran for council, Marvin. He ran five times, but he got the spot. That's determination, that's passion, and that's going for something. That's what I look for in a candidate myself. That's my own personal thing. I see a lot of candidates will run for one seat, and they don't get there. They'll pop up on the election again for another seat or somewhere else. So I'd like to find more that's dedicated to a reasoning why they're running and that. And these are just my personal things, my own personal thoughts here. They're not to reflect on anybody. I do want to mention that, got time we're getting going. I do want to put out a help wanted sign. We do need help in Fort Worth. We are looking for a new mayor. I understand that Maddie Parker is stepping down after this term, and they look like Crane is what I've told them. This is all just talk. No foundation to none of this right now. It's just rumor in the air, okay? It could all be wrong, so double-check it behind me if you hear something different. But anyway, what I look for a mayor here is someone that will show up at council meetings, start learning what's going on in the city, start learning what's happening, and be involved and really want the job. And we don't have people that show up during election time and then they disappear. So that's what I'm looking for. And the one member down on council, Chris Nettles, he's the only one on the council in Fort Worth that has done things differently. He's stepped up for the puppet. He's broke from the chain a little bit. And that's because I believe Chris Nettles is one of those persons that were out there with us years ago, at showing up at meetings and bond meetings and stuff like that and voicing his opinion and all that kind of stuff. He was involved. And then he got the job, okay? We have another council member down there. He's only lived in the district for 32 months. Never been to a council meeting, doesn't know anything about the city, and here he sits. He's leadership. He's in charge of a $1.47 billion business. But okay, This show is not to talk about our local city here, but I did want to put out a help wanted for a mayor. So if you know anybody that's, I prefer someone kind of retired person, not chasing a go, but wants to really serve the city. So if we can't get someone involved now to start showing up meetings, start learning about it, and get ready to put their hat in the ring. I'd love to see that. All right. So let's open up here to this. Tonight we have, I believe we have Sebastian just called in. John sent me his pictures. And we have the, let's see here, as soon as the slideshow gets around here to where I can see what's going on. Well, here we go. We have Shelley Garner on for Congress. Okay, she was the first one to respond, and we have her on the line now. And what we'll do here in a second, we'll open up the line. This gives a chance to candidates to call in, introduce themselves, tell you why in the world would they want to do this. But anyway, they can talk a bit, and you have a chance to. We have open phone lines. You can call in and ask questions direct. My job here is to try to stay completely neutral and bring the candidates to the people and let the people make a, make more of an educated decision on their own knowledge, okay? So let's see here. We've got Shelley's on the line right now. And can you hear me now, Shelley?
Yes, I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. And I'll tell you what, I'm ready for a cup of coffee. This is the part I like, where the candidates get to talk and I don't have to do a thing. That's the best thing for me. So anyway, you can take a few minutes here and tell why you're running, how people can contact you too. I think that's a big thing, that people always need to know how to contact these candidates. So, and how long maybe you lived here, and give us a little information about yourself and why, and then we'll bring on Sebastian, I believe, is on the other line there, and we'll bring him on in a minute. Okay?
Okay.
Go for it.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, for having me on. So my name is Shelley Gardner. To get it out of the way, my website is shelleyforcongress.com. Been living in District 12 since 1998. I'm a Texas Tech grad. I have a master's in electrical engineering, and I'm a kid from a Navy family. So my family's been in Texas for a long time, but my dad was stationed all over the world. So even though I'm from Texas, I didn't spend the first 13 years of my life here. And what I have found, the reason that I'm running for Congress is I own a Christmas lights business. And I know that sounds like that might not relate, but my busy time of year overlaps with the political season. And because we answer our phones and we hear people, you know, for the last 19 years, we've been hearing their concerns. And when they're concerned about the issues on the table, who's running for office. And then, you know, as a business owner, I feel the effects of bad economic policy. And then as an engineer, I see these problems that we have at the border. I see problems with the price of gas, with the price of groceries. And I just really feel like when things are broken, you know, you send an engineer. And I'm also doing this for my kids. I have 17 and 20-year-old boys. And, you know, when I was young, they always said, I remember hearing, well, if Washington doesn't clean up the way they spend money, future generations will pay. And I think those generations are now. It's my kids. It's everybody else's. So I'm just not willing to stand on the sideline and watch anymore. I think it's time to serve in the same way my father served. The way he served the country, this is how I want to serve.
Okay. Get back to the other.
Okay. Yeah. That's great. So, you have to forgive me for trying to get caught up here just a little bit. I'm off step a bit here, but I'm trying to get together here. But, okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'll bring you right back on in just a minute, and we'll bring Sebastian on and give him a chance to, and that'll give me time to get my head clear and come back to where we want to go, and then we'll take some questions. Okay, let's see.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Sebastian, are you on now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine there. I guess you heard... go ahead, and you heard me earlier. Just open up here and take a few minutes to express everything for yourself, okay?
Yeah, thank you. Well, thank you so much for having me. One of the reasons I'm running is I served in the military. I was stationed here from 2018, and I left in 2022. And I'm running because our country is at a precipice where, I mean, it is at this point where our government has not functioned. Between one side and the other side, we've seen the lack of governance. We've seen political narratives being shoved down people's throats, just constant fighting on both sides without actually doing anything for the people. We have these bought-out politicians that continue to get elected to stay in power, remain in power, and they just turn their backs on the voters. So as a prior service member, as a small business owner, I'm very concerned with where our economy is going. I'm concerned with where our country is headed in the direction. And so I think we need people from the working class to start stepping up into positions of government, which is why I'm doing it as well. As a sense of duty for serving my country, I wanted to step in as well and put myself in the ballot to offer the people another option to be able to look at the candidates and see who's from their community, you know, see who's funded by the people or self-funded and not bought out like most of the politicians that are currently running. So I wanted to offer that position, and I apologize. I'm getting a little bit sick here, so my voice is a little bit crackly. I apologize ahead of time. But one way voters can contact me is by email, or they can contact my phone. So you can go to my website at www.garrigforcongress.org. And the email address is info@garrigforcongress.org as well. Phone number is 210-718-8866. And either I or my campaign manager, Karen, will be able to answer any follow-up questions or anything that any of the voters are concerned about. But that's just a little bit about me and a little bit of why I'm running. So I'll just turn it back to you.
Okay, then. All right. That was Sebastian. Okay. Tonight we have candidates on for Congress, District 12. And what I do here is I do not endorse, not that my endorsement would be all that great anyway, but endorse candidates, but I will criticize candidates that I feel are not what we need to try to narrow down the field and on the shows. And I'll have a list on my website. I'll put up the candidates that refuse to even respond. And the one I didn't get a response from is Clint Dorsey, I believe, and then Craig Goldman did not even respond, okay? So even with the generic letter, even though those aren't great, but they're one step better than zero, okay? So I did offer them to come on the show and talk, and they just don't feel they have to, I believe. And like a lot of these candidates say, and we know that candidates get reelected without working for it, just by being part of the establishment and being able to play the game. That's it, not by serving the people, I believe. Get back here to Shelley Gardner. You're a Republican, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you still there? Okay, you're a Republican side.
Yes,
and then I believe Sebastian, you're a Democrat, right?
That is correct.
Is that correct?
I'm running as a Democrat.
Okay, good.
Yes.
One of my things is nowadays I'm trying to get people to look away from the DNR so much. Too many people vote just by DNR. And people will tell you their Mother Teresa just get elected. So you can't believe the labels that are on these people nowadays. So I'm trying to get people more or less to look at people to, like I said, answer questions, trying to find an easier way to kind of determine how many are here for the job. And I like this, having we have a Democrat on and a Republican on. And these are only two that have – now, John O'Shear, I believe, he did send in a photo, and he did contact back, but I don't believe he's on here tonight. So he didn't make it for some reason or another. Maybe overlooked it, but he did reach back. So we'll have to give him some credit for that, okay? And let's see. Okay, one of the things I've asked I got off track a little bit earlier. I was going to talk about 33, where my problem was in my voting, on 33, and I said – both candidates are Republicans that ran in 33. They both came on the show, and they both ran for the same spot, different times, but they both ran two times, second time running for the same spot. So trying to draw a coin between that, like I said, this is the first time I'm having to try to narrow down. Now I got to go to another step to try for a tiebreaker here to see
which one I would choose. But I hadn't had that problem, and I wish I had that problem all the time. And that's what we need in Canada. Let's look here. I was just wondering, Shelly, let me ask you, have you had much problem raising any funds to help your campaign? Is that okay to ask you that? Have you had any problems getting that, or how are you doing financially on your campaign?
Well, I think we're doing pretty well. After the SEC filings, we saw that we were second as far as cash in the bank, and that's primarily from my husband and myself. I think, and is it Trey who's on the side of the line? Is that the name of the gentleman who's on?
I'm sorry. His name is, I'm sorry, my other caller. I just lost your name for some reason in my mind. It goes blank when I try to.
Sebastian Gehrig.
Sebastian, that's it.
I'm
Jeez.
Sorry, Sebastian. First, okay. Sebastian, thank you for your service. And I'm sorry, I didn't. But kind of like with what Sebastian was saying earlier, this is very important to me and my husband. So we were making a large investment ourselves. And then what's really great is we've had people that we know contribute to our campaign, but we are not, you know, I felt like I kind of put my money where my mouth is, and I'm willing to show up with my own funds. And then I've had people, it's been a real, it's a humbling experience when people, you know, max out their contribution, like a teacher and his retired wife, each, you know, they gave us $3,300. That's very humbling, and it makes me work very hard, because when people trust you to do it, when they trust you, you don't want to waste a single penny of that, and you're going to keep their faith and represent them well, both during the race and after you're elected. So with regard to finances, I think we're doing fine, but we've done it mostly through our own efforts and then the efforts of friends and family. And sometimes people who hear, you know, when I'm doing things like this, people after events will decide that, you know, they've caught the vision and make a contribution. And we're very grateful for that.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of people get money, you know, for major, you have more freedom, and it's good to show a respect for the people's money. Sebastian, the same question there. How are you doing?
Well, I've been primarily self-funded. I have been fortunate enough to, I believe, the latest number is $460 is what we have raised from the public around, just general Fort Worth. I know there was a donor outside of Fort Worth that donated to us, I think, $250. So I've been primarily self-funded. I have not exceeded the $5,000 threshold, although we are, I mean, just about to hit it here soon, shortly. So my FEC filings are just the blank form, Form 99, just stating that we haven't reached that $5,000. Mm-hmm. But just like Shelley Gardner said, I think it's very important that the money that we do receive is you know, taken care of and properly spent in the proper areas. This is my first time running, so it is a little bit difficult running the campaign and having a full-time job and also running a small business, which is located in San Antonio. That was my mom's business that she's now retiring. So I've been multitasking as much as I can, but I've been spending my own money, and I plan to continue to do so because I believe we need candidates, just like Shelley said, where you got to put your money where your mouth is. And so if I can raise some, great, but if not, I will continue to spend my own money where needed to conservatively and try to get to where we need to be, which I think right now we're healthy in that aspect. So as long as I keep working my full-time job, I should still have continued income to be able to pay for it.
That's good. That's good, because too many people are just pay to put in office, you know. They buy them, the big money does, and I don't want to embarrass anybody by not getting large funds. It is hard to get any, believe me. And when you raise up even a small fraction from the neighbors, you're that's outstanding, actually, even though sometimes the number is not real great. You know, it's easy to be crooked and take the large sums. And I'll tell you, the three organizations here that I've gone against big time, and that's the Fort Worth POA, Police Association, the Firefighter Association, and the Star Telegram. All three of these organizations have undermined our elections, give money to candidates, It's just they buy candidates with large sums of money, and I think these organizations should be neutral. They should be spending that money in the doing this job, so I wouldn't have to do it. They should have a local voter education program, and do it in a big way, and get people more involved, and try to get the general public involved more, instead of buying candidates. So I'm against those. And but you know, when you get that big money, that's what puts you in there and be part of it. So. Yeah, I'm glad there. And I want to update also on the Democrat side that didn't call. Trey J. Hunt never did reach back either to me at all. I never heard anything back from Trey, I believe. Or I'll take that back. I think I did maybe get an email, but I hadn't heard anything from Trey Hunt. So, okay, on that side. But anyway, I'm afraid that's one of the problems is the money, is that it does take money to get yourself, especially running for Congress. There's a lot of people to reach, a lot of area to cover. And I've ran for council 4 times. I'm going to do it again because it's a lot smaller and I can afford to do that maybe. And but one of the things I do, and even my opponent, the incumbent Gina Bivens, has said this is one of the best things too. It's complimenting me on that, even though we don't get along at all. I do a lot of leaflets door to door. I don't go knocking door blocks up or blocks like that. You've got too many people to reach to be standing around knocking door to door and talk to people. There's way too many. You've got hundreds of thousands of people to reach. So I print up those postcards, and I got an over-shoulder bag, and I can put out 200 to 300 a day and take a nice walk and headphones on and hit each door and let that postcard say what I've got to say. And also it's people awareness. If they don't know you're there, they surely can't vote for you, right? It's people awareness. One reason I do this, and I encourage candidates to do this more, is I hit every door. That way I hit 50% of the city's unregistered voters. You know, if you started raking across these people, you could pull out enough to overcome what's kind of controls the area right now is what I see by the establishment. And so anyway, 50% are unregistered, and I don't believe they'll – get involved or become registered if they don't know what's going on because they have no incentive for what's going on. Now, when all these candidates run for office, they always do their mail out, but the Republicans mail out to the same Republican voters that voted last time. Democrats mail out to the same Democrat voters that voted last time, and neither one's reaching out to that other 50% and the other, there's another 20% that's not voting at all either. They are registered. They're not reaching out to those. They're only working in the same group. So we stay with it. If we replace one candidate, usually we just replace it with another candidate of the same caliber, basically. And the only way I see to break this is to try to get more general public. And that's one reason I put the signs out for the local voter education program. I put them out so general people were your Women Lead of Voters and the Sierra Club. You never see them advertised to the general public. It's always on their website. So I go do these forums. I quit doing a lot of forums. They're pre-questioned. The answers are there. They only reach 20 or 30 people, the same ones in the same party. I don't really do many. I will, but I don't know that many. I don't feel that effective. So, okay, I need to change decaf coffee because I talk too much sometimes. And let's get back here to the I wanted to bring the other name up, and I wanted to see if there was anybody that had any questions for the candidates. That you can call in at 515-602-9610 if you have any questions for these candidates. You're welcome to. I do want to say these podcasts, I've done them for a while, and we do get quite a few people that I can go back and see the numbers go up. They do come back. It does give you exposure. I'm not as big as I'd like to be. I wish I could put this on billboards, you know, we can draw people in, but and maybe if the POA would give us a donation to do that, we'd do it. But Shelley, go ahead.
Those billboards are pretty expensive. So you
they
won't
are
see
expensive.
My face on a billboard.
Well,
yes.
You know, I bought one. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I didn't mean
who
to cut
bought
you off.
A bit? Yeah. Oh, no. I was just having an interchange. But I like what you mentioned. One of my favorite things in this process has been getting out to really speak with people. And we have been knocking on doors and leaving postcards on doorknobs, you know, our push cards out, especially with the beautiful weather we've had lately on and off. But I have to tell you, there's nothing more exciting than to go into a diner and order some eggs and toast and then meet everyone in the diner. And people have been very pleased. They're refreshed. They found it refreshing that a politician was willing to come meet them where they live and shake their hands and I've just had the most wonderful conversations, people throughout District 12. And so I think that's been my favorite part of this whole process. And we've tried to reach out to, Republican groups, but also to neighborhood associations where you meet people from all walks and all political leanings. So thank you for reminding everyone. Sebastian, how have you been getting out and shaking hands?
So I've been I have been working with the parties, block walking. I've met a lot of constituents, not only just Texas 12, but also for Dr. Mia Pohl that's running for just county Tarrant County Commissioner 1, precinct 1. It's been great meeting the people around here. I've been trying to get as much as exposure. I do work most of mornings, Monday through Friday from 8 to 4, so it's been kind of hard to run the schedule. But on the weekend, except this one, because I am unfortunately sick, and I had to actually cancel out on a neighborhood association yesterday, which is unfortunate because I really did want to go meet people from that neighborhood as well. But I've been doing, what you guys have been pretty much saying. I ordered new push cards. Little postcards that I'm going to start putting on doors. It's just me and my campaign manager, and we're, which is also my partner, and we're going out there and we're trying to go out to every event that is offered to us. I know for the most part, Parker County, I've been going out for the Parker County Democratic meeting. I haven't had the chance to really expand out there as much as I would like to, being that that is a huge part of our district as well. And I often think that Parker County gets overlooked in these type of election runs because they're kind of just tied into Tarrant County. And they don't have their voter spread is a lot farther. We've been just doing the stuff that is in-person meet and greets, taking stuff like this. Try to get ourselves exposed out there naturally as much as possible because, like I said, I don't have enough funding to do billboards or any of the TV ads or anything like that that would be very effective, at least to getting the name out, of course. But I'm trying to get out there more and hopefully by, if we do continue on March 5th, there's going to be hundreds of events that I'm going to definitely be wanting to get involved with. In running this campaign till November.
Yeah, also, that was a good point, too, that Shelly, you brought, too, about working the coffee shops and that, too. For some of these candidates, low income, which y'all both are doing are the right thing, of trying to get the most exposure with the less money, it's management. And that's two things both of y'all have in common, too, knowing something about business somewhat and having business, and that is a good background to have somewhat to understand the fundamentals of business too, because it works in all fields. I mean, even in a marriage, business can work. So, I asked the candidates on 33, and I ask them a lot of times about Congress. I'll start with you, Shelley. What do you think about campaign contribution limits and reducing the pay that Congress people get? How do you feel on both of those questions?
Well, currently, it's my understanding. Right now, I guess the limit that you can contribute would be $3,300 for the primary and $3,300 for general per person. And
I'm sorry to cut you off, but there is a campaign contribution limit?
Yes. So you can only contribute as a person, you can only contribute to a campaign up to $3,300 for the primary and for the general election. So the most that any person could give you for your campaign is $6,600.
Okay. That's by individual person, though, right? That's not the overall.
Yes. Now,
okay. That's something I didn't know either. Go ahead.
And see, there are ways that if groups wanted to, maybe purchase advertisement on your behalf, that's considered separate.
That non-monetary donations. That's
right. For the FEC guidelines indicate that that's already in place. And I think the salary for I guess there it's 174,000 or 170. Let me double check. It's
somewhere around
there.
You're in the neighborhood. It's in that neighborhood there. And I'm just thinking that a lot of people work a lot of jobs a lot harder, and plus all the benefits, the expenditures you're access to too. That's good. I hadn't looked at that in Congress either, but I was just thinking that, you know, an average police officer that works on it, puts his life on the line, only makes about the average a little over $50,000 a year. So I don't see how a congressman should be worth three times that. No offense to anybody, but you're supposed to be working for the public anyway, and for the good of the job, and not for self benefit only. Now I know it might be some hard hours and work, but I'm thinking $100,000 a year is still quite a bit of money. Would I be wrong in thinking that?
Well, and to confirm, I just wanted to, it is $174,000.
Okay.
And since I haven't experienced, I do know that I've seen folks have issues with that because you have to maintain your home back, you know, you have a family and a home mm-hmm. back in your home state, and then mm-hmm. you live in D.C., but you've brought up a good point. That's a good one. I'll have to think about that. I had
okay,
not
at least
thought
we think about it. That's good.
Terms. What is the best? You know, and I guess
well,
until
brought,
I see it.
I'm going to tell
a
secret.
It's
local
board
education is for me to get educated. It's not for anybody else, let me tell you. It's just for me because you brought up a point, too. You do got to take care of a home and be away at the same time. That can be expensive. But I think your expenses cover something. But anyway, so far, let me see. So far, I guess, like you said, you had to think about that a little bit more for the medical system. And that's a logical answer there, to be undecisive on that part. What about the now, when I asked for campaign contribution limits, I wasn't aware there was any kind of limits on Congress. The only thing I know about is the city, and that's enough to give my ulcers. And the overall is what I was thinking, you know, if like the mayor in Fort Worth, $1 million, over $1 million they put into her, and the job only pays $29,000 a year, and they put $1 million to put her in there. So on Congress, I'm thinking they reach about, some of them reach maybe 600,000-700,000 people, maybe more or less, somewhere in that neighborhood. The mayor reaches 1 million people. I'm thinking your campaign contributions at the top, $150,000, $200,000, and if you know how to manage money, $200,000, you can reach a lot of people and do a lot with $200,000, and that means you know how to manage money, not just throw money out there, but know how to manage it. And I think that would help us get a better candidate in the end too. The ones that know how to manage money and make them work for a little bit more would. But there's not a cap like that, though. You can raise $1 million, right, running for Congress. Would that be right, Shelley?
Yes, you can. You can raise
okay.
more than $1 million. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm just saying. That's my kind of point of view on that. What do you think? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Sebastian, I think that's a lot of money, and I know it depends on the races. And but right now I think people are – there's been a certain amount of fatigue when it comes to politics. And I think that people aren't giving as much as they have in the past. I think that's something to be considered. And the idea of it's hard. That's a hard question. Sebastian, do you want to weigh in on that one?
Yeah,
I was going to put him across to him too. I was just doing one at a time. That's okay.
Sorry.
The thing, like you said, less people giving money in. So the only ones that aren't giving money in is the big, big money people. And they're not doing it for just the fun of it. They're doing it for their own good. And that's why I think a contribution limit, that's my point. Sebastian, okay, on the same questions there, and I done almost forgot the first one, but the campaign contribution, do you think we ought to put not that it's going to happen anyway unless people really get together and demand it, and that's going to be hard to get done, but just out of just – opinion, do you think there ought to be a cap on how much, like they did the football, NFL put a cap on how much money they spend. I'll tell you, that made that sport a lot better. A lot of teams went to the Super Bowl that never have gone before. So go ahead.
So I absolutely do think, although we do have caps, like Shelley brought up with the individuals, I know political action committees, I think it's 5,000 per election, if I'm not wrong. And my biggest issue is we should have caps because this raising this type of money that high, over $1 million or all those type of contributions, it's a way to keep the small people like us from running. You know, it costs $3,000 to put $3,125, I believe, was what we paid to get your name on the ballot. That in itself, for middle working class families, is a lot of money. I actually had to take a loan from my mom in order to pay her. You know, I paid her back, but I had to take it out because I didn't have it in savings to run when I told her I was going to run. So those are like the barriers that they put at the beginning. And so, yes, I do think there should be contribution limits from just in general, from all individuals, PACs, and everything. And I also think that candidates should not accept more than, honestly, 10% of their entire campaign finance from being from political action committees. So if you're not 90% funded by the people, especially that of the people of the community, then you shouldn't be running because you're clearly bought out by, and you can't say otherwise. If you're running with more than, or less than, I should say, 90% of money from the people, it doesn't matter what you do. You can stand up there and you can tell me every day that you are for the people and you can do whatever you say, but I can tell you right now you're not, because you represent the donors that are feeding you money, whichever way they're doing it. I just think in this time, a lot of people are extremely exhausted of these politicians that are bought out, and lying to us. I also think another thing is, I think right now, especially with inflation and with the cost of living being so high, I don't think people have money to give, which is why I'm more, focused on, I mean, trying to be smart with the finances. I got my degree in Penn State in business finance, and I've been trying to manage my funds as effectively as I can by, you know, like I said, buying the postcards and going to put those in there instead of paying for mail out, being a little bit more personal. All those things are cost effective for me because I don't have to pay for other people to do it, and I don't have to pay for, you know, USPS to send out all those mail out letters into the mailboxes. Instead, I can go out there and go door to door and do it. That's more effective in managing your money. Just time-wise, obviously, it is more time-consuming. But I think that the people don't have much money to give, and if they're going to give, it's not going to be given to politicians. I think we're tired of the liars, and you know, personally, if I wasn't running, I wouldn't be donating to any of the campaigns. Doesn't matter whether Democratic or Republican, because I'm a moderate Democrat, and honestly, you got to shoot yourself in the foot with whichever party you decide to go with. That's how I see it. I would have rather ran independent. However, independents don't win, unfortunately. And so I had to take the party that I felt like was going to be best aligned with my values. And I grew up with a conservative father and a progressive mother, which was a very interesting dinner table conversation. So I was always the mediator. That was they kind of prepared me for that a little bit. But, you know, getting back to the other question, the $174,000 a year, which is what the congresspeople make, I do think I don't know, because I haven't been in it, to know sufficiently enough, nor have I ever made that much kind of money. But if I were to think about it, I mean, yes, the cost of living in D.C. is a lot more expensive. I'm not sure what renting an apartment it would cost. I don't think people need to buy a house over there. Because I mean, I know why you would, that's because it's an asset and it would make the money. But in terms of, you know, like people like myself, if I were to get elected, I'd be looking at apartments that couldn't even afford any of the houses there. I don't think it would even be that much. I feel like it would, but it wouldn't, I don't think it would be, I don't think 175 or 174,000. I think that's more than enough. I think it's an excessive, I think, maybe 85 to 100 is where it should be, but like I said, I don't know, because you know, you do have to keep the house that you have or apartment here in the state, you know, where that you got elected from, and then also have a housing over there. So having cost of living you know, in two different locations, I could see how that adds up. Also, I'm pretty sure all the expenses when it comes to Congress is paid for by Congress when you have to fly back and forth. I don't know exactly, so that's why I'm saying it's So if that is the case, then we should be looking at cost of living and then adjusting it for that. But if we could just put a number to it right now, I would say 85 to 100 should be the normal range for it. Because, like I said, I do think it is expensive to live in D.C., whether it is renting or buying, and having to maintain two locations at the same time and with your family and responsibilities.
Okay. Pretending there's no hidden causes that we don't – of course, causes that we don't know aware of. The I've never looked at the expenditures for Congress. So much. I've just studied our city a lot, and I know our council members got quite a good-sized budget to work with. And I also figure that their rooming and everything would be paid for when they go to – all that go into the hotel expense or whatever. So I was thinking everything, you know, and God, the expenditures they give the city manager when they came here, moving fees and just tons of money. So I hadn't looked at that site, so I'm not educated on that. And like I said, I got enough just keeping up with what I do look at here. Okay, Shelley, I guess let me ask you, what is the number one? This is probably just a generic question everybody asks anyway. What would be your number one subject, topic to work on? That's what's the most important thing, the first most important thing to you that would be that you'd want to work on if you were elected?
Well, the first most important thing that I'd want to work on is the first most important thing that I keep hearing about over and over from all the folks that I'm hearing in District 12. Generally, you know, I stand before them and I said, okay, you can, let's say I'm your representative and you can ask me anything. 9 times out of 10, they're very frustrated with the situation at the border. And, I mean, we're hearing a lot about it on TV. We're hearing about the border bills. That it's not it really is the concern that's in the front of most people's minds. And to me, it seems very logical that a physical border, we see from all the folks that I've talked with about the border, that walls do work. And it's a common sense solution as a first step that we need to build a wall. And so that's the simple answer to your question. We need to build a wall and untangle this mess that we have at the border. We have so many people in limbo, et cetera, period, I guess.
So I guess it'd be safe to say security would be your number one.
Yes, because it's not.
Okay.
Yes, because it's an issue.
Yes.
See, the Border Patrol's charter, their charter is to keep terrorists, illegal weapons, and illegal drugs from coming over the border. Currently, they're barely able to. They're acting as asylum agents rather than Border Patrol. So it is. You're exactly right. It's an issue of national security, and so we have to address that first.
Okay. Okay. And Sebastian, what would be your first priority? What do you think is the most important thing?
Well, one, I would have to agree with Shelley there that this country's security is definitely on my top priorities. It's one that, you know, as someone who served this country, I think our national security is important, and that with the southern border is critical to address. I think both parties have failed at it miserably. And for the last 26 years of my life, it has been a consistent issue that I have been able to recall, with every single side promising to fix the problem but never finding a solution or coming together to even find one. Truthfully, I honestly think it's more of a party thing now. It's like whether the Republicans want to run off, they want to not solve the problem and they just want to run because they know that problem is something their constituents are heated about, but they don't really want to solve it because if they were to, they wouldn't be able to campaign on it. And the Democrats are the same way as well. I the border is very, very complex, and not only do we need to increase funding, the wall is not going to be sufficient. I can tell you that. They're already cutting through the portions that are up. In most parts that can't have a wall need to be, in my opinion, I'd rather use some of the military resources like our drones for intelligence surveillance, to use infrared and to do 24-hour surveillance across the border sections to help Border Patrol as well. We could also increase funding to, the Border Patrol increase their pays because they don't really get paid a lot and they put their lives on the line. So increasing their pay is definitely a very good start, because that also weeds out corruption, because a lot of these cartels, they're just paying off people at the border. So whether you put a wall or you don't put a wall, those drugs are going to come in here. As long as the United States continues to have a market for drugs, people keep buying, there will always be a supply of it, no matter if you put a wall, no matter if you put people armed against the border, because there is all of these, it's the same with the human trafficking ring. If there is a market in this country, which is horrible to say that there is, then there will be the individuals who will bring it here. And that's what we need to start to fight. We need to close the market here. We need to do what we need to do, investing our military's intelligence resources and closing those markets, arresting those who are involved, and then securing, in conjunction with securing the border. But we need to work with Mexico. As somebody who was raised by my mom, who she was born in Mexico City and she lived her whole life there until she came here in 94 to the United States. Legally, she migrated. She also agrees that the border is a freaking mess. And she told me that, I've grown up on both sides of the border, actually, both in Mexico and in the U.S. Mexico is more than happy to help. Unfortunately, we just ruined the relationship with Mexico. We blame all the problems with Mexico. So that doesn't really help our relationship when it is a problem between both countries. Actually, Mexico has paid more the price than the United States, because they're literally the collateral damage between, the Central and Southern American drug cartels that are pushing everything through their country into the United States, because the United States continues to purchase and buy all the drugs. That is my 2 cents on the border. My biggest thing is, we need to secure the border. We need to know who's coming into this country, and we need to invest in actually doing something productive to say, to protect not only our children in this country, human traffickers. We need to protect them from all of that stuff by putting these people in prison, securing the border, and investing in deterrence outside of that. Now, for migration, we need to invest in the South American, Central American, and other destabilized nations, which we've also had a lot of to do with the destabilization of those nations. So these people are migrating here. They're not rapists. The majority of them are not murderers. They actually do. We're more of our own people commit more crimes than these immigrants. So believe me, that's not the issue. However, we need to have a process where they can come in legally through legal channels. So upgrading the infrastructure to allow that, so they can come through in legal ways. And I do think the Remain in Mexico policy was good. I think we need to have on both sides of the border an asylum process that's efficient, that doesn't exceed 90 days, and they can either know whether or not they can come in or not and get their work visa and so on and so forth. All of that needs to get redone.
Go ahead, Shelly. Do you want to say something?
Well, part of it, to go back, I actually don't think that Mexico is paying more than we are. They just calculated that the cost last year to pay for the immigrant situation, to house, to clothe, all the scenes that we see of, in airports and schools, that it estimated that the American taxpayer paid $451 billion last year. And that is due to be repaid every single year as long as this continues. And as far as the border goes, it's shown, you talk with DPS, if you talk to people down at the border, there are areas on TikTok where the walls may be open, but by and large, walls work. They do provide a deterrent, but we also see this constant tension between the federal and state governments. I think that's something that's not helping the process at all. Part of the reason that we still see this continue is we don't have people in Washington who can think through a problem. We don't see them. There are only, like I said, one of the reasons I'm running is that there are only 7 engineers in the House and the Senate, and I think they're just not willing to look at solutions that make sense, physical solutions that make sense, instead of fighting, instead of the federal and state governments fighting with one another. They should actually be leveraging what the governors are doing that are successful. So I think we need cooperation between federal and state governments. We need to acknowledge what does and doesn't work. And I'm a little concerned. I'd like Sebastian to clarify, because if we start placing controls, how do we stop or control demand on our side? I think you mentioned that. Can you clarify that for me?
So we have our departments of the NSA and the CIA, these departments that do a lot of intelligence gathering for all over the world, and we need to start investing in also doing it in here. So I'm not saying that we should go after people's privacy, but these people that are doing this aren't doing it hiddenly. They're not hiding from the way that this is done. I mean, we just had this man, and it's escaping my name. I mean, the name is escaping my head. I apologize. Epstein. There's a good example. The list needs to be provided. What are they hiding behind that list? Our own government is not releasing that information. That needs to be released. Those people are directly involved in this situation. They don't have a right to privacy in my eyes anymore, because they literally engaged in, you know, the trafficking ring. And so hiding their names for privacy is, to me, no longer needed. We need to prosecute the people. They need to get us their fair trial and go through the court system and do what we need to do, just like everybody else would need to, you know, who gets caught for a crime. And you know, going back to what you just said about the wall, I do think the wall needs to be built. That's fine. I don't think the wall on its own is going to deter anything, because they can cut through it and they can continue to do it. So if we have a underfunded border patrol system, but we have a wall, they're going to still cut through it and go through it, and there's not going to be people to stop them right there and then. So that's why I think it's a combination of multiple steps, multiple security points, whether it be the wall as well, with, you know, drones doing infrared to catch the human smugglers that are coming in through Mexico, or if it is, you know, also increasing the pay and getting more resources to our Border Patrol that are risking their lives every day to secure the border. In working with Mexico, I mean, I do think Mexico has yeah, they don't pay in the taxpayer form, but what most Americans don't know is that when an illegal immigrant enters the United States, it doesn't matter, once they touch the U.S. soil, they are immediately guaranteed the constitutional rights that are afforded to each and one of us. So they now have to go through the asylum process. We have to then put them and give them a court-appointed lawyer. Everything, we have to house them. We have to do all of that, because now it is required to the based on our U.S. Constitution to afford those rights to them, to a fair trial, to listen if they do have an asylum case or if they don't. So that is something most Americans don't even know about. And so even if we put the wall, you're putting the wall on the side. You still put a lot of our land that's technically our border, so we haven't given it to Mexico, that isn't where the wall can't be physically built. If they reach U.S. soil, they're immediately given those rights. So that's another issue, is that we need to, in order to deter, we need to be also working with Mexico to build something on their end as well, whether that be a wall or whatever they would like to do on that side. We can figure it out. You know, Mexico would be more than happy to get rid of most of the cartels that are in Mexico that are, you know, operating out of there, which they've been heavy on trying to weed them out of there, because it's ruining their tourists. You know, they're cities that they want tourism. That's what their economy also builds on. And people don't want to go to Mexico when there's all these type of cartels, you know, shooting up places and fighting up, you know, taking people. It's just not – obviously, you know, nobody would like to go there. So that affects them, which is why they've been heavy on this. So if we were to work with Mexico and really work with them,
I think we could find a solution to close the border properly while allowing, you know, the asylum process to continue, while addressing human trafficking and drug problems by having Mexico also to catch it at their border as well as ours if they do, for whatever reason, get across. We can have our implementation there. But we need to do more cybersecurity and finding out because that's where these people are unfortunately being sold. They're being sold online, and we need to do more to surveil that dark web and catch these criminals red-handed.
Hey, Sebastian, I guess, you know, I'll push the same question to Shelley too there. I was just thinking, if I was congressman or woman or whatever, I was elected, I would think the approach of going and asking the Border Patrol employees, what do you want? They do the job. Wouldn't that
yes.
be a good approach to ask them first, what do you want, and then as a congressman, supply it for them? Would that be the right
Absolutely.
Way to go?
Exactly.
Okay. And the second thing real
yes.
quick, I'm going to agree with Sebastian here. Let's cut the pay down to $80,000, give the other $80,000 congressman to the Border Patrol. We'll raise their pay with your pay, huh? How's that? No, I'm just
absolutely.
I'm just thinking, no, that's okay. But anyway, I think a lot of candidates kind of forget to ask the people who do the job, and start thinking it's their responsibility to what to do. And when they don't do the job themselves, they don't have the experience of the people that do the job. So, but anyway. Yeah, that's just what I just kind of want to bring out. I think that would be a good approach myself. Would be first go to the Border Patrol and ask them, what do you want, and then go from there and that. So, okay, let's see if there's anything else I had here in my mind. Is there anything else? Oh, you know what I was also thinking when I first after I asked that question, I was thinking maybe I should have asked what your second most important thing instead of the first one, because what I got was the first one, security. So we got that down. But nevertheless, and it is the first. Without security, all the others are irrelevant. And I don't know if everybody can hear me okay or not. Sometimes my headphones echo a little bit. But you don't have anything without that. So that is true. That is number one, is security and that. And that, without it, we don't have it. So, okay. Well, we're getting down to the end of this hour here. I scheduled another show after this one to talk about the small claim court. And I may just leave a opening statement or whatever. No one's called in about that or seems to be interested in it, but it's something that needs to be modified in our city. Even if you don't get elected to office, they should be more involved in their local city too, with their council, their mayor, and what's going on in their area. Even though, same thing with preachers, no matter what title you have, I think you should always, regardless, be a responsibility to pay attention to your local district and some of your local, you know, not just because a lot of people, when they get a title, they think they're immune from everything else, and that's all they're supposed to do, and they forget everything, don't care about anything else. But I think we need everybody to pay attention to our local government more. And our small claim court, I went through this a while back. I had one of my signs up for campaigning. It was a $140 sign, damaged, taken down by the president of a neighborhood association. And I took her to court, and it cost me $155 for a jury trial at court, the small claims court, $140 for the sign there. So, you know, we're getting close to $300, around $300 here we got into this. And we go, and I win my case. But only to find out there was no prize. I'd have to pay another $155 to do a writs against them to get my money. We got to go a step forward. And that I found really appalling. I thought, no, that's just too much. And then you don't even know you're going to get it then. You got to gamble again. So I am going to be going to Tim O'Hare, our county judge, and I'm going to send them some notice and stuff and ask them on merit if they won't modify our small claims court, that if you win your case, you should get compensation then. And then there's ways to penalize the person. I know the red light cameras we had here were owned by private organizations in other states, and they had ways to enforce their money for those by holding your tags up. So, but anyway, I'm going to, and that's what I wanted to put on here tonight. Now that I did it, I don't have to do it now. I done put it on here. So that I'm going to approach them about that. But there's so many things in our local city that needs to be paid attention to, but it's neglected because it doesn't affect the person. But just like that's one of 100 little things that really need to be addressed in our own city to take care of. So, and that. So, but anyway, I've got a also if neither one of y'all make it through on this, if you ever consider being a host for a radio show, give me a call because you can see I need all the help I can get here. So if you'd like to try that. But anyway, okay, for a closing here, let's go back. Shelley, I guess on the way out here, is there anything else you'd like to add to this tonight? Anything you got to say?
Well, as we look at all of these issues, what I hear, one of the things that I hear is that people are really looking for integrity in their elected officials. And they do want people, like you said, to go out and collect information. Like what Sebastian and I have been doing, speaking, let's say, with folks who are working at the border, with BPS, with a lot of the folks that Abbott is sending down. And they want to trust us to keep them in mind and be the same person in Washington that we are here. And I think that that integrity is something that we really should expect from our elected officials. And you've hit on it with regard to, you know, how campaigns are financed and how we operate and how we do and don't show up. And I think that's very important. And that's part of the reason that I think we're both here today. And ultimately, when, you know, as the next Republican member of Congress, what I want to do is keep an eye on traditional conservative values, smaller government, strong military. I think the increased personal freedoms. You know, that's why I get a little nervous about surveillance. That I think that also walks in hand with greater freedom, with greater responsibility. And I'm also hoping to cast vision for young people that as we want, if we're going to stimulate the economy, we need to cast vision for students to pursue STEM fields and cast vision for them that, you know, the American dream is still alive and that conservative values, sometimes we've lost our way. And I want to cast the same vision for young people today that folks like Ronald Reagan cast vision for me, because we saw them take risks. We saw them fix their economy. We saw them in the Cold War, and they worked together. And by using smaller government principles, stimulated an amazing period of growth and success. And that's what I want to see for everybody. And so that's what's going to be driving me is the lens of true conservatism, and then also a lens of integrity and remaining who I am and remaining in touch with the constituents in District 12. So I hope that kind of tells you a little more about me and what my plans are.
One other question real quick, Shelley, maybe you can help us with, or Sebastian can help us with, either one or both of you can. The boundaries for District 12, what would be your outside streets or main points if a person wanted to see if they're in your boundary right now? How would you explain that? Can you pretty much your boundaries for District 12? What do you cover? What area?
Well, if you go to on my website, shelleyforcongress.com, I loaded a map. But roughly the if you go to Google Maps and put in U.S. Congressional District 12, it'll pop up with a little red outline. But it's sort of a north-south line through downtown Fort Worth running west until almost Mineral Wells. And then there are some cutouts. You know, there are little cutouts around the stockyards, parts of between, you know, along Hemp Hill and 35 where some areas have been cut out. And so the best thing is to check a map, and there are places online where you can say, what is my district? And you put in your address, and it'll tell you exactly where you are.
Okay, I would say pretty much going west from down close to downtown Fort Worth, going west pretty much.
Yes, sir. It's
okay.
About, well, and the districts – the congressional districts are about 766,000 people per district.
Well, okay. I knew Mark Beasley was around 700,000, something like that. I came across that some time ago. And, 700,000 people. And like I say, so you're reaching less than what a mayor has to reach here, has a million people to reach. And so when it comes to campaign contribution limits, stuff like that, that's when I kind of based on, you know, that. But also. But, yeah, I appreciate both of y'all coming on this show, and it's this kind of stuff I think is going to take to try to start turning the ship a little bit to get more people back involved again, at least. I don't know for sure, whatever, but that's what we're goal it is. I'd like to see more people, you know, get involved in our local and realize that it's a obligation, not a privilege, to take care of your city here. And I'm big at going to school board meetings and the schools in elementary, because I think the real future is going to be to get down to elementary and start trying to plant some seeds in these kids' heads that it's an obligation to take care of your city, you know, when you come out of high school and as you get older, and that to who your council, mayor, and board member and stuff like that. And if you get some seeds planted in their head early, maybe they'll develop later and it'll help them to be more encouraged to be involved in this. So I can't thank you enough for coming on, Shelly, and I wish you a lot of luck on this and on your campaign. And Sebastian, what have you got anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, I'll just do my closing here. So going back to what Shelly said was on the privacy and small governance. So for me, it's, I don't think the Republican Party is that much about small governments. Maybe you're more on the original side of the Republican Party, and so I would agree that there used to be a concern for small governments. But I know in the terms of women's rights right now with the abortion bans, I do think that right now our government is overstepping their boundaries by removing rights and privileges from women to be able to decide what to do with their own bodies within regards with their doctors. So I don't think that the government is I don't think the Republican Party right now in the current state that it's in represents the original party and what it was in terms of considering small government. If anything, they have been more for big government, especially with the control, because that's how we start. We start controlling one thing, and then it's the next thing. So that opens precedence for other future controls. So for me, you know, I'd tell the people again that they should look at the people that are running, where their money is coming from, what their values are. I do think there needs to be a balanced individual with both conservative and progressive ideology, because I think it does take both to balance out you know, to go to Congress and to fight and call out the institution when they're lying, and challenge the status quo, which is something I'm really big on doing. If elected to go to Congress, it is to challenge it. But to do that, I need to know what the constituents of Texas 12 need, and if as a representative, if elected, my mission is to not only do quarterly, I'm going to try to do as frequent, but quarterly at a minimum, town halls, physical, where I can be there with the people, listening on not only what the issues are at District 12, but what their concern at a national level as well, and you know, listen and get feedback as well on how I'm going and voting and doing in Congress. I think it is critically important to be involved with your constituency more than what we see today. I mean, if we even see them at all, most of the time they get elected and you don't see them around until the election cycle comes again, and then all of a sudden they're knocking on your door or they're asking for your vote again. And so I think that needs to change. We need to show what real leadership looks like by finally electing somebody from the working class that will actually commit to those things, which is to actually be involved. And I understand that Congress has a very hard schedule, but people who really care and who truly want to represent the people will make the time to do it. And that's what I think it's going to take for a candidate when elected, is going to be somebody that takes the time to actually care for the people. So I don't think it's about representing just Republicans, and I don't think it's just about representing Democrats. It's about representing the entire community of District 12 in a balanced way. And to do so, I think you need a balanced candidate, which I think I'm that candidate going forward here in the primary as well.
All right, Sebastian, okay. You did tap on two things, and Shelly, I have not to try to swing one way or another. I've voted Republican because of Trump. I don't see him as a Republican or Democrat. I see him as a shrewd businessman, and that's who I want in office. And also, I voted for him because he was the apprentice, and I wanted to see someone get fired. So I really like that. That was my point there. But here's two things that you tapped on. The smaller government. Yes, Republicans say smaller government. Well, I found out since I've been asked why I'm not really happy with either party or whatever when it comes to facts. If they really wanted smaller government, and I've been to the Women's Lead voter, Republicans Women Lead, and this, we added two more council members to the city of Fort Worth. That's a waste of over a couple $100,000 a year, and it is for nothing. For 5 years, I watched this come down and tried to I made good arguments about it, totally, all the way down the line, but they didn't. It was already planned out to do it. Well, no matter what the people said, they were going to put two more council members in because they want government bigger and the people smaller. And they did it. They lied. There's videos. And then the redistricting, it was unbelievable what they did to Fort Worth. I mean, Jarrett and Crane, they redistricted part of it. District 3 has an island, I think it is, or it's District 6. Actually, here, and then you look over, you'll see another little spot over here, a little round island that belongs to them. I mean, you're talking about, and it was racial gerrymandering and everything else, and they added two more council members. And Maddie Parker is supposed to be a Republican, supposed to be anyway, but added two more council. And there was no need for two more. We did not need two more. There was not a demand for it whatsoever. You can ask anybody, did you have any problem getting a hold of your council member? Were they able to call you back? Were they We didn't need them. We don't need them. But like you said, it's just bigger government. To make us, maybe I'm giving them too hard of a time. They had to gang up on me with a couple of more. But nevertheless, that I'd love to see reverse and put that money back into our pockets. We do not. It's a total waste of money. The other thing, when you say town halls and stuff, when I first ran back in 15, that was my whole ideal as a low-income candidate, was to rent schools. School buildings are located conveniently in the neighborhoods. And my ideal is to rent the schools all through my district, and paper the area because I need all the exercise I can get, and I won't go out and exercise unless something drives me to do it. So I was going to paper the areas around the school, whichever one I have rented with the leaflets, and try to bring people in. And I found out that you cannot campaign in a school. So this is one thing I've been going up to the school board about that. It's an empty building on a Friday night or Monday night, whatever. There's no kids there. It's an empty building. And we pay for it with our tax dollars. And it's an ideal. As a matter of fact, they even use them to vote at. But anyway, I was refused to use the schools to campaign in. So I started renting schools and use them just to, I said, well, they can't stop me from giving information out. Well, they did. And I'm getting it back now. But nevertheless, they're ideal. The buildings are located great for town halls, what have you, debates. They're identically, you know, bring it to the people because they're not doing anything. They're not coming out. So I'm saying put it on their doorstep and maybe we can get more involved there with that. But the funny thing was when they denied me to rent the school, it wasn't but a couple of years later that Mayor Betsy Price and Gina Bivens rented used a middle high school to hold a campaign event in. And you bet I called downtown and jumped up down about that. So they gave me one. They gave me the same school. Next week I was able to campaign because I was running that election too. I was able to campaign. So the only three people in Fort Worth ever campaigned in a school would be myself, Betsy Price, and Gina Bivens would be the only three people. And I called the school board about this, and I said, look, I don't want to stop that. I want to keep it going. I'm not calling to stop it. I'm calling to encourage it. But they don't want to encourage that because if you're out there where you can reach the public, you may, you know, educate people, and it may threaten their world, and people are starting to know what's going on. So anyway, those two things you mentioned, I just wanted to bring up real quick. I'd love to see people get involved with checking our school board and stuff and trying to get these schools opened up so the candidates can use them to campaign in. When I run again, I would love to use six or seven schools across my district and go in and answer questions and find out, and same thing like Shelley, going into coffee shops and stuff. This is the same thing again. For a low-income candidate, it could be very powerful, and it wouldn't cost much to do. So, okay. Anyway, you know that. But anyway, Sebastian, I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank Shelley for coming on. Definitely, I appreciate that very much coming on here. And like I said, we're going to start up again in around August, and see if any candidates want to come in before the election there. And I wish you both the best of luck here, And the job's still open for a host on this show, because I'd love to shut up and let someone else do it. So anytime. But anyway, okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And
thank
what we're going to do, we're going to call it a night here. And like I say, and the podcast, a lot of people do visit it afterwards. So, and then, like I say, in August we'll be back on. So good luck to both of you. And I can't thank both of you enough for coming on, okay? Y'all have
well,
a good night.
Thanks for having me. Thank you so much.
It's good to meet you, Sebastian.
Likewise. Have a good night.
If y'all want to carry on a conversation, we can keep it going. If you two have anything you want to talk about to each other, it's welcome to do. But if not, we can call it a night.
Thank you. I think I'm ready to. I have to get back to work. How about you, Sebastian?
Sure. Thank you. For your time.
Yeah, I need to take my medication. I've been getting real sick, so it's been bad.
Well, and I need to take my Geritol. It's
oh,
time
no.
for me to take my Geritol. So, okay. Y'all have a good night.
Well,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Y'all have a good
you.
Night.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.